CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Thomas Halliday, a paleontologist and author, writing magically and convincingly of other lands, journey through Earth's extinct worlds. This is before the asteroid, before the death of the dinosaurs. It's called the Cretaceous period, 125 million years ago. And I learned from Thomas to call dinosaurs knuckle walkers. What does that mean, Thomas?
Knuckle walkers. I suppose what you're talking about is some of the titanosaurian sauropods.
Yeah, the titanosaurus that was a knuckle walker.
Well, I mean, the reason I call them knuckle walkers is because they, through their evolution, when they're attaining such large sizes, in order to have this kind of pillar-like limb, one of the things that titanosaurs in particular do is they lose the bones that are the same as our fingers. They lose their digit bones. And so their front feet are essentially just highly sort of modified hand bones. They're walking on the ends of their knuckles. So that's what I meant by that word.
You write that this is the heyday of non-avian dinosaurs. The Titanosaurus is 17 meters long. Very large, and these are herbivores. They're eating the prosperity of the earth. What does the forest look like at this time? My note says cypress trees.
Yeah, this is a time. This is back in the early Cretaceous. This particular site, a wonderful environment in Liaoning in China. At this time, flowering plants hadn't got going yet. So we're not seeing, they had begun to exist. The very earliest flowering plants are from this site, places like Archifructus and so on. But mostly these forests are made up of conifers and of ginkgos and cycads and seed ferns and so on. So it's probably a less colourful forest than the one that we're familiar with today, still a sort of it's a diverse place. We have dinosaurs of all shapes and sizes, from those enormous 17 meter long titanosaurs to small flying ones and birds like Confucius ornus, for example, and ornithine birds, which is in my book, I have it sort of displaying its these long ribbon streamer-like feathers over the lake Sihatun.
I learned from you that the feathers are significant and that they might be part of camouflage, they might be part of fighting off insects. How did it work, the colors and the feathers?
Oh, so this particular site, the J-hole biota of Yishan in Liaoning, is where we first began to understand color in the fossil record. So when I was growing up, dinosaurs in books were always just painted a color of whatever the illustrator liked, because how can you possibly know? But a particular animal called Sinoceropteryx was then discovered in the 90s, which we can find evidence of what are called melanosomes, which are little packets of melanin within the cell. The preservation at this site is so extraordinary. You get this subcellular preservation. And the shape of those melanosomes can tell us whether it contains the black type of melanin or the kind of gingery red type of melanin. And in the feathers preserved in this fossil, we're able to establish the pattern. So we know that it had a kind of black bandit stripe across the eyes, which is usually useful in a way of disguising yourself against things that are looking out for eyes as a very obvious sort of predatorial piece of evidence. And we know that it had this kind of stripy tail, and so and we can see this. These techniques have then been used on all sorts of other animals, like Psittacosaurus, which is an early relative of Triceratops-type dinosaurs. And we can see that it also had these kind of stripes along the insides of its thighs, and it had counter shading, which proves that it lived in a forested ecosystem where light coming from the... what counter shading does, it's a way of flattening yourself. It makes you look less 3D and therefore less obvious to anything that's trying to look for you. So yes, feathers and the patterns of pigmentation and the way that organisms signal to one another is very similar back in the Cretaceous to what we see in ecosystems today.
The butterfly, or what was butterfly-like, there is a magic to this explanation, if I understand it. The patterns on the butterfly wings may refer to a creature that no longer exists, or their fears of a predator. How so, Thomas? How does that work? That if I, when I have the butterflies outside here this summer, what am I looking at in those strange eye-like displays on their wings?
So many butterflies today have what's known as an eye spot, which is a distinctive circular pattern. Their wings, there's usually, you often even have a little bright fleck within it. And the prevailing idea is that these are intended to mimic the predator of whatever wants to eat them. So if you have a small garden bird that is about to eat that butterfly, the butterfly flashes its wings open and appears to be the eyes of an owl or, you know, something that might want to eat the bird. Now, because of this extraordinary preservation I talked about before, there are organisms in the J-hole biota in Yishan, which have this same kind of eye spot coloration. So they're not butterflies, they're lace wings, but they, to all intents and purposes, if you were to look at them with an untrained eye, you would think that they would be a butterfly. But these eye spots are preserved in the fossil record of an animal called Origrama elisabrosa. And if it's doing the same thing that butterflies are doing today, then the most likely example of a predator of a small insectivore in the Yishan formation is something like a small dinosaur. So if it's trying to look like the eyes of, you know, a small theropod dinosaur, that is a sort of wonderful glimpse, a mirror of the last mirror of a dinosaurian gaze.
It's so poetic of nature to do that for us. Thomas Halliday, the author of Other Lands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds, and we're headed farther back. We're headed to the Jurassic itself. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.